specifically mean the place of chaos, which is from our external vision at the present time situated in the Mathura district of Uttar Pradesh. This is specifically Nandasya Rajaha. This is Nanda Maharaj now having run. He's the king, he's known as Nanda Maharaj. It is Vaishya, but he's known as king because he's the leader of the Vaishya community. Vaishya is their business is Krishna, Gorakshya, Vanijya, agriculture, cow protection, and trade. We have that word in modern Gujarati or Hindi, Vanya. So that comes from the Sanskrit word Vanijya. Vanijya means trade. Vanya means merchant. So, among the three occupations of the Vaishya, Gorakshya, protection of the cows, is considered most important because cow protection is central to Vedic culture. Any follower of Vedic culture must respect the cow. Now that helps them, even if they're Mayavadi, they all have a need. Mayavadi, at least in the traditional sampradaya, they will respect cow. So that will help them because Krishna is fond of cow. His name is Gopal, Govinda. Go Brahmana Hitayata. Go Brahmana Hitakari. He does good and he likes to see the cows. And Brahmana is a benefit. And in one Prabhupada says that Krishna is known as Go Brahmana Hitakari. He likes to see the benefit of the cows and the Brahmanas, but also see the cows in one. We have here so many Kapila, brown cows. So they're supposed to be the, according to Shastra, they are the most auspicious cows, dark brown color. So Nanda Maharaj, Vaishya, this is Nandasya Raja, it is his Raja. Sometimes we hear of Vrindavaneshwari or Vrajeshwari, for sure. So that means either Radharani or Yashoda, she's also known as Vrajeshwari. She's known as Vrajeshwari because she's the wife of Nanda Maharaj, who is the ruler or overlord of Rajabhumi, this place where the cows are protected. So all very nice, we're getting ready for the appearance of Krishna. Now that Rajabhumi, that is eternally the residence of Krishna. Krishna has appeared in Vrindavan. But actually, Krishna is always in Vrindavan. Vrindavanam Sarasyabja, the Ekam Padangasya. See, Krishna never goes out of Vrindavan even by one step. Therefore, there's no question of Krishna not being in Vrindavan, and there's no question of Vrindavan not being full of Sarva Samriddhi, Samriddhi Man. Riddhi means opulence. Samriddhi means full exhibition of opulence. So Vrindavan here is described as Sarva Samriddhi Man. So full sarva samriddhi, giving full emphasis, that all opulence is in full in all ways, became present in Vrindavan. And Vrindavan is always fully opulent. But with Krishna's appearance there, then that opulence became manifested for everyone to see. Otherwise, Vrindavan is always the place of the goddess of fortune, Rama. Rama Akira, the place where Rama, the goddess of fortune, performs her pastime. Lakshmi Sahasra Shata Samrama Sejamanam. Krishna has always served with hundreds and thousands of Lakshmi, or goddesses of fortune, in the land of Raja. Actually, not when we say Rama, Lakshmi, Sri, these are names for Lakshmi, who is Vaikunthana Patni, she is the wife of Vaikunthana, Narayana. And actually, she can't enter into the pastimes of Krishna as the gopi in the same way as described in the Purana. But she wanted to. She wanted to join the Rasa Krita, Rasa Lila. But she couldn't do it, despite the following austerities, because there's no way to enter the pastimes of the intimate pastimes of Krishna with the gopis by performing austerity. That is not the method. You can perform austerities as much as you like, even if you are lecturing. But the process is to be gopi anugatya, to follow in the footsteps of the gopi. Gopi anugatya vina aishvarya bhave bhagyaleha na pai gopi bhave. That verse is there, Chaitanya Charitamrita. Oh, I didn't remember it properly. But the essence is there. Gopi anugatya vina is without following in the footsteps of the gopis, if one has aishvarya bhava, the mood of thinking of Krishna in awe and reverence, then even if you worship Krishna, you don't get the position of the gopi. It's not possible, even for Lakshmi. So here it says, Rama Akriram, the place of pastimes for the goddess of fortune. So the purport, Prabhupada is given the purport, that this Rama here indicates that the supreme goddess of fortune, Adi Lakshmi. When you say Adi Lakshmi, we usually think of the form of Lakshmi with Vishnu. But really the Adi Lakshmi is Radharani, because she is the source of all the Lakshmi forms. Just like from Krishna, all the Vishnu forms emanate. Krishna and Balaram, from Balaram come all the jivas, that's one direction. And then comes Vasudev, Sankarsan, Padyumna Aniruddha, the third Chaturvyuha, and Narayana, and then another Chaturvyuha, and all this, all the incarnations who appear in this material world, they appear through the agency of the Purush. That means the Purushavata, Karadakshay Vishnu, Karadakshay Vishnu, Shiradakshay Vishnu. So Krishna is the source of all the avatars and all the jivas. Aham sarvasya prabhava, matastha ramdhavasati. Everything comes from Krishna, everyone comes from Krishna. The female principle, who is non-different from Krishna, shakti shaktanata abheda. The shakti means the female principle, and the shakti mata, shakti ma, the male principle. They're non-different because they're inseparable. The source of power and the power itself, they're inseparable. There's no meaning to be a source of power if there's no power. And power cannot exist without a source. So in this way, they're inseparable. Still, they're defined as Shakti and Shaktiman. So Shakti means the original Shakti, or energetic expansion of Krishna, is Radharani. And from her, all the Lakshmis expand, all the gopis expand, then the Dwaraka, Mahishi, they are all expansions of Radharani. So here, Rama, the goddess of fortune. Rama, this name suggests enjoyment. Ramanta yogino namte satsangam kiranani iti rama padayanato. Param Rama Mukti. The absolute truth is known as Rama. Because the yogis, they take pleasure in thinking of Rama, considering Rama. So that this word gives the idea of pleasure. Just like Krishna is known as Radha Raman, Gopi Raman, Rukmini Raman. These are names of Krishna, who enjoys Radha, or who gives pleasure. Either he's enjoying, or he's being enjoyed by, or he's giving pleasure. Pleasure, the idea of pleasure is to Radha, the gopis, Rukmini. We also have Janaki Raman, name for Rama, enjoyer of Janaki, Sita Raman. These are common names even today. Yeah. Such names. So this suggests this name is given Rama. There are many names of Lakshmi. Rama is a common name. So this Vrindavan became the place of pastimes of the goddess of fortune. It specifically indicates that Radha will appear. Krishna doesn't go outside of Vrindavan, that is said. That means We hear of Krishna's pastimes in Dwarka, Mathura. Sometimes he goes to Hastinapur, Indraprastha, so many places. Krishna also went to the city of Kashi. He went to Kundera, it's now in Maharashtra. Still that area is called Vidarbha. Rukmini's name, Vidarbha Kanya, the young girl of Vidarbha. So many places Krishna visited. But that was in his, not his original place, in his Vasudeva. Vasudeva means he's known as the son of Vasudeva. But in Vrindavan, Krishna is not known as Vasudeva. He's known as Nanda Nanda, Yashoda Nanda. Outside of Vrindavan, Krishna may be known as Vasudeva Nanda, Vasudeva, or Devaki Nanda, Devaki Krishna. But in Vrindavan, they don't know who is Devaki, who is Vasudeva. They know Krishna, Govinda, Gopala. Even outside Vrindavan, Krishna is sometimes called Govinda, Gopala, Hari, Damodar. These names are also given. You'll find Krishna is addressed by these names even outside Vrindavan, in his pastimes outside Vrindavan. But Govinda, of course, that means to give a pleasure not only to the cows but to the land and the senses. So that applies to his pastimes outside Vrindavan. And also within Dwarka, undoubtedly, so many cows must have been there also. Because any city, any auspicious place must have cows. There's no question of building a city, at least in India, in those days. Of course, Dwarka wasn't exactly in India, just off the coast. But there must be cows. But Krishna wasn't himself personally looking after cows, because he was in Kshatriya Bhava. He's writing of the Kshatriya. The Krishna is known as Govinda, Gopala, Damodar. Damodar pastime that takes place specifically in Vrindavan. But even when he goes outside Vrindavan, he may be called Damodar, Giridhari, remembering those pastimes. But Nanda Nandan Krishna, he's only in Vrindavan. So if he's in Vrindavan, what's he doing in Vrindavan? Vrindavan, especially his pastimes are with the Vrajavati. Different quality of pastimes to his pastimes elsewhere. Especially within Vrindavan, everything is special. Sarva Samriddhi Marg, full of special opulences which are not seen elsewhere. But over and above everything else, the speciality of Vrindavan is that Radhi Vrindavan Ishwari, Radharani is there, which according to Bhagavatam, she also goes outside. It means she went outside to meet Krishna at Kurukshetra. And also from Radha Sanghita we have information that Radharani and so many gopis of Vrindavan, they sometimes used to go to meet Krishna in Dwarka. But generally, even if Krishna may appear to go outside Vrindavan, but Radharani said she's not going outside. She's staying there. So therefore, Krishna, he's also staying there. Staying in Vrindavan. Which is a place of extraordinary pastime. Just yesterday I was speaking with one man from Bangalore. So he knows Narayan, but not Krishna. Now they don't know Krishna, but they're particularly attached to Narayan, Balam. And his wife is from, his wife is from a family attached with the Mata, Mantralaya, Raghavendra Swami. So she's attracted to Krishna. So she got one book and she saw the Atma TV program, and just from that she started chanting 16 rounds and everything, offering her food, rising at 4 o'clock and all these things. But he's not against, as he said, we know Narayana. But actually, Krishna is Narayana, there's no difference. But within it there being no difference, there's also the difference that Krishna has some wonderful qualities which even Narayana doesn't have. That Narayan, he is worshipped in great awe and reverence. But Krishna, he is not worshipped in awe and reverence. It may seem that he is less than Narayan. This is the mistake. That even Lord Brahma, he thought, who is this Krishna, this little boy running around in bare feet? Running around? What is it? Sometimes the cows, other little boys, they're just village boys, they're stealing his lunch packet. Then they sit to eat. And one boy is eating something, he says, this is nice. He takes one bite and says, here, Krishna, taste this, it tastes pretty good. This is not proper culture. You can't, in the middle of eating something, you can't just take something off your plate and give it to someone else. Although, I know someone who does that regularly. But that's not proper culture. How can you do that? And sometimes you see the gopis are calling Krishna bad names. Lampaka. That every day you're inciting this. That Radharani is saying to Krishna, I know you're a lampa. I know you're a devotee. It's not a very good word to call someone. And there are so many bad words. What is that word they say in Hindi? Dogra? Dogla? Bastard. You don't know that word? Bad word. It's a bad word. It means bastard child. Anyway, maybe I didn't hear it properly. But anyway, there are so many bad words. You don't say that to someone respectable. In America, you might go up to the president and call him all bad words. And now everywhere they have cartoons ridiculing people who are supposed to be respectable. But that's not Vedic culture. Vedic culture, you don't make a cartoon in the newspaper. You don't make some caricature of the king and make him look stupid. No, it's absolutely not that. If you do it, you'll get your head cut off anyway. There's no question to it. But that respectable person is not to be disrespected. And now, who is more respectable than God? He's the most respectable. Narayana. Om Namo Narayana. In great respect, he is to be worshipped. But we see that in Vrindavan, there's not that much respect for Krishna. There's a lot of love for Krishna, unlimited love for Krishna, but not in a very respectful way. If even Lord Brahma, he says, Lakshmi Sahasra Tata Sam Brahma Sevyamana. The Lakshmis, they're serving with great respect. That's his vision. He sees the gopis as Lakshmi. And so he can't imagine serving with anything but respect. But the gopis, why Krishna likes them more? Because they don't serve him with respect. They disrespect them. That, of course, is on the transcendental platform. There's a difference between an atheist disrespecting God and the intimate devotee, because that disrespect, that is on the platform of the highest love. There's a lot of difference. That's why we cannot imitate. Imitation of the intimate pastime, that is a great mistake by which one falls down. If Radharani calls Krishna bad names, Krishna enjoys. If we call Krishna bad names, then it's not. There's Radha and Radha's external manifestation, Durga. So we'll come under the punishment of Durga. She has 10 hands with different weapons. And they're all meant for people who do things like disrespecting the personality of Godhead. So that is something very intimate. That is not to be understood by everybody. And that's also not meant for public distribution. Nowadays, again, in the press, they have this whole thing of everything should be public. That's why you'll find even the royal families who are considered most respectable, the press wants to find out any news, how they're arguing among themselves. That's supposed to be kept private. It's not proper culture that it's understood that wherever there are living beings, There will be some misunderstanding, that is inevitable. But that's not, that private affair is private. It's not meant for broadcasting to everybody. It's only low-class people who gossip. You hear that Rama, he went disguised and he heard. Which class of person was that complaining about his wife? That was some Vasana, low-class person. The low-class people, he was complaining about his wife and comparing to Rama. We are not like Rama, his wife was living away from home and then he took him back. I'm not like that, you get out of it. So that is the business of low-class people, to make some gossip and talk about others and see their bad qualities and broadcast it everywhere. It's respectable people, they keep their disagreements private. Their intimate affairs, that is private. Just like it's understood why people get married. Well, there may be different reasons, but one of the main reasons is to engage in sex life. But that's not supposed to be talked about. And nowadays they have this, the different film stars will talk about and discuss their private lives. That goes on. Otherwise now children being born. It's definitely going on. But it's not something for everyone to discuss. It's a private affair. It's public life and private life. In the modern age they want to make there's no distinction. If everything should be public. But Krishna, you can say, this is Narayan, his private life, is Krishna. Or actually that is his most cherished life. The Prime Minister may have so many duties and so many public affairs, and he also enjoys them. But he wouldn't enjoy in the same, he wouldn't enjoy in the same way if he didn't have any family, children. That's his best enjoyment. That gives him more pleasure. All day the Prime Minister, of course in the modern age nowadays, they're mostly listening to so many people within himself. Modern politics means the opposition, they'll all insult you like anything. And your own party, especially in India, it's all sycophant. You know what sycophant means? They're simply praising you, and you're so wonderful, and Jai Lalita waddles into town, and people offer her full obeisances. Sonia, all the people, oh, how wonderful, how good. They weren't doing it before. When she became chairwoman of the Congress party, then all of a sudden people started to praise her. They suddenly discovered what a wonderful person she is, and that there's nothing better than to praise her upside down, inside out. Although they weren't praising her before. But suddenly when she came to the Congress position, head of the party, and then the Congress people are praising her. And similarly, the opposition parties, they weren't blaming her. They didn't care. As long as she's a housewife, let her be a housewife. But all of a sudden, when she becomes a pretender to the throne, pretender to the curse of the prime ministership of India, then all of a sudden they're blaming her like anything. But, as I say, in traditional life, when there's a Raja, when there's a king, there's no such thing. There's no opposition party. If there is, they have to do it in secret, because they'll get smashed. That's the position. There's one Raja, he's in charge. He's power, he's control. So there's only praise. There's no such thing as allowing the opposition and democracy and everyone should have their opinion. The Raja rules the country, and if you don't like it, you go to another country. Or you try to make a revolution, and if you succeed, you succeed, and you become the king. Otherwise, you get your head cut off. That's all. That's the system. Raja, ruled by a king. So all day the king may be listening, actually from the very beginning of his thing, the Raja, you can imagine what false egos they must have. How do they begin their day? They're woken up, not like some watchman, tuck, tuck, tuck on the door, but if they're woken up with music and then some poetry praising the qualities of the king, all day they have to listen up. And they have a lot of work also. It's no easy job to be a king. But people are praising them, and it's all formal and official. Maharaj, Jai Ho, you see the Mahabharata, when there's anything, whether it's Kamsa or Ugrasena, whoever happens to be on the throne, then Maharaj, Jai Ho, Maharaj, Jai Ho. So, very formal. So, he liked that. If he didn't like it, he wouldn't be the king. He could also go to the forest, become a yogi. So he likes that. But he likes more when he goes home and his children play with him. Prabhupada told a story, very nice story, of Gladstone, the Prime Minister of Great Britain, when it was great, when he was Prime Minister in the time of Victoria, the Prime Minister of the whole British Empire, the biggest empire the world has seen since the time of Maharaj Janamadeva. So one man had an appointment to see him. He was sitting on a chair outside his office. So he was waiting and waiting and waiting. And he was thinking, I wonder what he's doing. He's the Prime Minister of the whole British Empire. Must be very busy. I wonder whether he's discussing about sending a gunship here and there. That was the British policy. If anyone disagreed with him, they would send one gunship because they were, the British Empire was built on naval power because their navy was more strong than anyone else. They were way ahead of anyone else. So anyone disagreed with them, just like in China, they didn't want to cooperate, so they sent a gunship and blasted them. The Chinese used to keep this, like a tied up, blasted their shikas to pieces, and then the Chinese had to agree. So is he discussing where to send a gunship? Or is he discussing how to cut off the thumbs of the weavers in Bengal? Or probably he didn't discuss, that was just left up to the viceroy. What's he discussing? Big, big things, important things. So he looked, and let me have a look and see. Maybe I won't get my appointment, but I should see what Mr. Daniel Gladstone, the head of the British Empire, is doing. So he looked, there were no guards around, so he peeked in the door. Slowly opened the door and peeked in, and there he saw Prime Minister Gladstone, the head of the British Empire, on the floor on his hands and knees, with his young boy, grandson, sitting on his back saying, "Gee up, get up, horse." So the Prime Minister of the British Empire had become a horse. Why? Why should he do that? No doubt he had so many important things to do. But sometimes he likes to play with his grandson. And he becomes subordinate to the grandson in some game. This is game. Gee up, that's what you say to a horse. It means get up. Giddy up. Okay. In England it's gee up. So like that, Prabhupada gave this example. Krishna in Vrindavan, he's powerful above everyone, but he enjoys being subordinate to his devotees. So that's also not for public. Mr. Gladstone won't do that in the House of Commons. If his grandson comes, he won't get down on his hands and knees in the House of Commons. He will maintain his decorum. That's another reason why the Vajravasis, they stay in Vrindavan. Otherwise, how can he be Vasudev? How can he go on with his pastime, his other pastime, the maintenance of the world, if he's in the Vrindavan mood? So there's a certain place for those pastimes. That is Nandasya Vajra. That is the place of Nanda Maharaj, the cowherd arena. So he doesn't perform those pastimes elsewhere. Just like Gladstone, he doesn't get down on his hands and knees to become a horse in the House of Commons. But only when he's privately alone with his own devotees. So this actually is very intimate. That's not for everyone. It's not for discussion with everyone. Daniel Gladstone won't discuss when he goes to a meeting of all the different prime ministers of different countries. He's not going to discuss with them, "Oh, I love my grandson so much. he gets on my back. They also have their grandsons, but they don't discuss like that. There's time and place for everything, even for God. He can do whatever he likes whenever he likes. But to preserve the sweetness of that intimacy, he performs those pastimes in Nandasya Vraja. I didn't even come to the point of the Sarva Samrindhi Ma, how the opulence of Vrindavan. But anyway, there's unlimited opulence to Krishna's pastimes in so many ways. So, as the power's gone off, I thought, I'll finish there and Hare Krishna. Any questions? Does anyone have any question relevant to the class, first of all? No, I'm saying, first of all, if anyone does have a question which is relevant to the class, then we should discuss that first. Otherwise, we'll go off on a tangent. It doesn't look like there is anyway, so.
What is the name of the
of Britain at that time, at the present time, his name is Tony Blair, but at that time was Daniel Gladstone.
Daniel Gladstone, real
Victorian name. And his big rival was Disraeli, who was a Jew. He was the Prime Minister, yeah, they were. Because he was more friends with Victoria, because he knew how to flatter her. Whereas Gladstone was very, he didn't like her much. By vote. At that time there were votes, but women didn't get the vote till later. She was the queen, yeah. And then there was Florence Nightingale, who was unheard of. She left home and went to the Crimea. There was no such thing, but she became glorified for doing. I don't know. I don't think so. In Ireland, up until recently, you were supposed to get your parents' permission. You couldn't get married without your parents' permission. Until about a generation ago, there were still cases if someone got married without their parents' permission, their parents would just reject them, disown them. Yeah. Nowadays, Ireland is as fallen as anywhere else in the world now. When the blue videos started coming in, then everything changed. Blue movie videos, yeah. In Sicily, Italy is completely fallen. Yeah, they're different culture. Yeah. They're even more Italian than the Italians. Don't say that to a Sicilian; they'll shoot you. They're more British than the British. More loony than the British.
Sarva Samrindhi Ma and Rama Prija Abhul are saying that under
opulence. Yeah, that's why I didn't get it. Yeah.
So if you say Rama Prija means Rama, that's very.
It's an esoteric understanding. Yeah. That's that. Means it became very opulent.
Which hasn't happened now because the government policy is to make the city happy. Because the villages are wretched. Anyone who lives in a village is wretched. We were talking yesterday, I forget where, but in every village, every village now has some relative in the city. And there's this mass exodus in the city. And in the last 25 years since I came to India, since you came to India, the population shift has been remarkable.
It's going on, I think.
People in the cities are now 45, 50, or maybe 50.
And now they lift the land ceiling, so it's going to get like in the West where they have huge farms which are run by machines with a few people, just like America.
Yeah. It's very much against the welfare of the ordinary person.
Another reason they're so poor in the village is because of government policy. They fix the price. The government fixed the prices for the produce.
Because they rig the whole economy.
With fertilizer and everything. Yeah.
And the whole idea of industry was just to make more and more business. And business existed for thousands of years without industry.
People were rich. Why were the British, the Danish, the Portuguese, the Dutch, the French, they were all coming around to India? They came around Africa.
Right.
Missing Africa to come to India. Because India was so rich. So rich, yeah. So their riches was, they had gold, jewels, not bank balance, paper money in the bank. Gold, jewels, silk, profuse milk products. They could throw at each other.
Yes.
Dhanavan, that's all about you, called that. Who's got grains and who's got cows? They are rich.
It's hard to conceptualize how it used to be when we don't see it now. But you know, some people were poor, like for instance, shudras were not supposed to have any money.
Well, there were rich shudras also. Not this time, but in the last 200 years, there were well-to-do shudras who owned land and, you know, they owned land and had businesses and so they all got mixed up. Either by caste they'd be a shudra, but by vritti, by occupation, they'd be somehow or other they came up. I guess if there was some intelligent shudra, they could be, they'd be brought up by some, by their master, whoever it was, and they could flourish in that way.
One thing we don't see in history is a lot of changing of caste. That's what we talk
about. No. Generally, it's understood that the son of a Brahmin would be a Brahmin. Generally. Otherwise, why is that story there of... that story is there in the Upanishads. Who's that? Gautama? And what's the boy's name?
Satyakam
Jabala, yeah. So why is that... story shows that it actually wasn't a very common thing. The fact that he accepted and it's mentioned in the Upanishads means that it was actually, it was showing the principle, but sadly it wasn't very common. What was your question? We don't have our own pleasure potency, but we are imbued with the pleasure potency. The absolute truth is anandamaya bhata, joyful by nature. So because we are part and parcel of the supreme whole, we also share in that pleasure principle. Not that because we are part and parcel of Krishna, and Krishna is God, we are part and parcel, therefore we also have our own part and parcels and our own potencies. No. There is similarity between the jiva and Ishvara, but it's not. There are certain similarities, but not in everyone. Although in one sense it could be same. The jiva in the material world, he's imitating God, so he also sometimes in Bengal someone introduces, this is my shakti, means his wife. It's not he's trying to say that I'm Bhagavan and this is Radha. Not like that, it's just language, that's all. And that's also said that behind every great man is a woman. So woman is, that's also accepted, the woman is the Shakti of the man. Most, Prabhupada comments on that most men need a woman to get them going. They need some Shakti. They need some inspiration. Someone who's inspired from the platform of the transcendental Shakti, Paraprakriti, then he doesn't need inspiration from woman. But someone who's not getting so much inspiration from the Antaranga Shakti, then he could take some inspiration from the Bahiranga Shakti, who is personified by woman. So that is understood. Why will the Kshatriya perform his duty and conquer? It's all, the woman gives inspiration to do all this. Why? Why do people work hard in a factory to maintain their family? The wife is there, hey, go out and get some money, bring some money. Otherwise, who's going to work? Why should you do it? So that wife is called Sadharmacharini, or Sahadharmacharini. She performs in Vedic culture, that is Dhaptaya, so that all one's activities should be for the sake of Dharma. So the wife performs. Together they perform religious activities. That means in Vedic culture, when we say dharma, that doesn't mean only performing fire sacrifices or something like that, but everything, your work, everything you do. That then you have your swadharma, brahma dharma, kshatriya dharma, vaishya dharma, shudra dharma. And for women, there is three dharma to serve the husband. So she serves him, she inspires him also. A bad wife will inspire a man to become a rascal. And a good wife will inspire a husband to be saintly, righteous. A woman is Shakti, very powerful. But that we should understand, the point is that we're only imitating. We are not Purush. And the living being in a female body is not Prakriti in the way they think they are. We are all Prakriti, you are meant to be enjoyed by Krishna. So in illusion we may appear to have our potencies and our expansion, like our children, our property, but actually nothing belongs to it. It's all Krishna's potency. Nothing is mine, everything is Krishna's.
In the Scripture
Master is also encouraged by spiritual advanced disciples, yes? Yes, why not? Yes, Prabhupada said so many times, I'm inspired, I'm encouraged. And then he said, if you don't print my books fast enough, then I become discouraged. He was going ahead, translating more and more, and the disciples weren't keeping up with the printing. They're getting it because it's a big job to go from Prabhupada's dictation to come out with Srimad Bhagavatam, Sanskrit fonts and then English. Diacritical marks and fully edited and printed without mistakes, big painting, big job. So when the disciples are falling down, Prabhupada said, I become discouraged with any order. 17 books are due to be printed, 15 volumes of Chaitanya Charitamrita, 2 of Bhagavatam, do it in 2 months. Impossible. Impossible is a word in a fool dictionary. Do it. They did it. Otherwise, one book with so many people working would normally take at least 6 weeks or 2 months. What happened, Prabhupada, he was translating Bhagavatam. So Bhagavatam is, he was seeing 12 commentaries in Sanskrit and one in Bengali, his own Guru Maharaj. And then he was giving the commentary. But whereas for Bengali, he was just seeing the Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary, which is very short. And his own Bhaktisanta Thakur's commentary. So it's much easier in that sense to do. And also Bengali is much easier language than Sanskrit. Sometimes in Sanskrit, the Prabhupada had his assistant to help in Sanskrit. So Prabhupada is just dictating and going ahead like anything, making the book. And killers of many people, Pol Pot in Cambodia and in Serbia, you had some famous guy in Bosnia, one of your people, I don't know his name. It's becoming so normal these days to be the genocide that you don't get famous by doing it anymore, unless it is something more sensational. So you can imagine that all of these demons are all much more nasty than Stalin and Hitler put together. They're all on the surface of the earth at the same time. Therefore, the earth prays to Lord Brahma, please help. You put this whole universe together. Now you better help us out. You make the demons as well as us, here the devotees. So you better help us out. There are so many demons, including my own son. I can't control him. Bhuvasa, big demon. Do something about it. So the something that was done was that Krishna appeared in this world. When the Lord appears, he appears with many, many devotees from the Yadu dynasty, and many, many members. And so many were devotees directly from the spiritual world. And there were others also who were demigods from the heavenly planet. So also devotees who appeared as members of the Yadu dynasty to join with Krishna and his pastor. Particularly three incarnations of the Lord, namely Krishna, Ramachandra, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When they come, they deliver many, 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 many living beings, thank you, God. Others, they come for the pleasure of their devotees, but particularly these three forms of the Lord, they have many, many interesting pastimes, and they deliver so many people, thank you, God. Ramchandra, he took all the monkeys and then so many inhabitants of the forest and all the inhabitants of Ayodhya. He took them all back to Godhead. And by their wonderful pastimes, which are recorded in Ramayana, in Mahabharata, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Bhagavat, Srimad Bhagavatam, they continue to attract the minds of conditioned souls and deliver them back to Godhead also, even after their manifest presence is over. They also deliver many demons. Even you'll find Mandodari, who was the wife of Ravana. She knew that Ram was the Supreme Lord. And many times she used to say to Ravana, you please let this Sita go. He says, not auspicious for you to teach. Even she's Maya Sita. She's not exactly the internal potency of the Lord, which Ravana cannot touch. But it's very inauspicious. Ram will come and destroy you. You give him back and then we can live. We can continue to, even though we are demons, we can continue to live as demons. But if you don't let him go, then you won't even be able to live as a demon. But Ravana being a demon never cared for Ram. He said, he's just a man. I can't be killed by a man, I'm a big demon. So eventually, of course, Ram did kill Ravana. And then Mandodari said, thank you very much for killing. She said to Ram, thank you. You liberated me. I'm glad you killed him. Someone has to kill him. That's a disturbance. And you are very merciful to him. You killed him. Similarly, Marici, when he was requested by Ravana that you take the form of a deer and you entice Ram away from Sita, so that I can kidnap her. And Rishi said, you're a rogue. What a nasty, I'm a demon, but I was just, Rishi was meditating in the forest, he's being afraid of Ram. And I'm a demon, but at least I know what. You won't get any auspiciousness from kidnapping Sita. That will be the end of you. But he said that anyway, I know you're such a puffed up demon that you don't listen to anybody. So I'll follow your order. If I don't follow your order, you'll kill me. And if I do follow your order, Ram will kill me. I'll be killed by Ram rather than you. If I get killed by you, I'll just have to go. I'll simply go to hell. But if I'm killed by Ram, I'll be liberated. So Krishna kills so many demons. Krishna, Ram, all the avatars, not all, but many of them, they kill many demons. Even not all of them, the Ramandas, we don't have any information of him killing any demons, but he was involved in so many crooked activities, by which later there was a big fight between the demons and the demigods, and so many demons got killed by this sweet little Brahmin boy. Big fight ensued after his getting involved in the affairs between the demigods and the demons. So, here's a list of big demons, not little demons, big demons, serious demons, firmly committed to the demoniac way of life, and very powerful also. They all appeared on the earth at this time, and they were all killed. by Krishna, or by his devotees. To be killed by the devotees of Krishna is also a sin. And that doesn't mean that he should say, I'm a devotee, let me go and kill a few people. No. In this age, you have to kill by killing the demoniac mentality. It's a good idea to start with our own demoniac mentality. If you're going to kill, think it like killing demons, maybe you'll be on the list too, you don't know. So all these demons, they got killed either by Krishna directly, or many demons were killed by, especially by Jina and Arjuna. What is that in Gita? Suryodhana points out. Jina, Arjuna, Vivakshita. The opposite army, that is protected by Jina and Arjuna. These are the two big warriors on the Pandava side. Duryodhana thought that these are the only two obstacles. If these two are cleared out, Bhima and Arjuna, then there's no problem. Yudhishthira, we can knock him over, no problem there. Sahadeva, Nakul, they're just boys. They're young, they're always they're just like young boys. They're young. They're not so tough. They're just the sons of physicians after all. They always, in this way, they always look down. Although, actually, in the fight, Sahadeva especially, at one point, he killed so many. But especially Bhima and Arjuna, they killed so many demons in the battle of Kurukshetra. And Bhima was also, he killed Jarasandha. Krishna didn't want to kill Jarasandha himself, personally, because he had some family relationship with him. You see here that Jarasandha was the father-in-law of Kansa. Kansa's daughter, Kansa's wife, with the daughters of Jarasandha. So Krishna didn't like to kill Jarasandha personally, so he had Bhima do it. Of course, Krishna killed Kansa, who was his uncle. But there was no, he had to do it, because no one else could do it at that time. At that time, Bhima and Arjuna hadn't come on the scene, and Krishna wasn't going to wait for them to kill Kansa. It was high time, his time was up, time for him to be killed. But then others, you see, the brothers of Kansa, they were killed by Baladev. Because Baladev, Kansa, Krishna was related to Kansa. When you say uncle, it's all very intricate. So Baladev, he didn't have that close relationship. So Krishna let him kill the brothers of Kansa. So he minimized having to kill his family members. There's so many demons they were killed. We were reading in the notes at the end of the last chapter. One name for Krishna is Maya Manusha. So this word is understood in different ways. But not that Krishna is a product of the material energy. But Maya Manusha means Guha Kapata Manusha. He appeared, he is covered over. Covered means not personally covered, but covered from the vision of materialistic people. Now, Ang Prakasa Sarvasya Yoga Maya Sanavita, Muro Yang Navitana, Siloka Mama Sanavita. Materialistic people can't see Krishna, he's covered by the curtain of Maya, they think of an ordinary person. So, Krishna and Balaram, they appear in this world. What is that verse? Ati Matyani Bhagavan, Saharami Nati Shabbat. How is that verse again? No, it's another verse from Bhagavatam. I just can't remember the first line. Saharame Nasishava Atimatyani Bhagavan Guha Kapatamanusha. He says that Krishna and Balaram appeared, although they performed many superhuman activities, but they appeared to the materialistic people to be ordinary people. In this way, they cheated them by thinking, because the ordinary people, they thought, Krishna and Balaram, they're just ordinary like us, like Shishita used to think that. Somehow or other, he managed to kill so many demons. He was just by luck, by chance. So the demons, even though they saw Krishna's greatness, they couldn't appreciate it. Now another meaning of Maya Manusha, and another meaning of the word Maya is mercy. So Krishna comes to give mercy to even big demons. Who would be merciful to demons? You simply want them punished. They're so bad. Sutana was so nasty. She used to kill babies. Now you may ask that why is it then that you see, Krishna is playing with all his cowherd boys. How is it they're all still living? Sutanam is killing all the babies. She didn't get them. By the power of Yoga Maya, she didn't get them. So, Kamsa sent Sutanam out, kill all the young born children. But what happened is, she didn't, by the power of Yoga Maya, she didn't find her way to the houses of the, even though he told her that you specifically you should go to Gokul, but she didn't make it there until she came to kill Krishna. And she didn't kill Krishna, she got killed by Krishna. So what happened, she found out all the young babies in the demoniac people's houses. So his sending out Sutana to kill all the babies backfired on Kamsa because so many children of the demons were killed. So she was so nasty, but Krishna was so kind and so merciful to her that he gave her liberation in the position of his mother. This is Krishna's kindness. That Bhakti Nath Thakur Asura Sakal Pailo Sara. He says that even so many great demons, they attain to a lotus feet. He says actually even these demons, they're not really demons. No one's really a demon in one sense. Certainly some people are demons. Otherwise Krishna wouldn't. One whole chapter of Bhagavad Gita is dedicated to pointing out what are these defects or the bad qualities of the demons. But inherently, no one is a demon because everyone is serving the Krishna. So Krishna, when he kills these demons, he kills their bodies, he takes away their demoniac mentality also, and delivers them back to Godhead, if they want to go. He reawakens their feelings for him, because Krishna is so attractive, even more attractive than other forms of God. That question came up, that where we find that Kamsa was in his previous life, Kala, and he was also killed by Vishnu. So how come he had to take birth again? That is because Vishnu, that's one of his qualities that he has, one of the qualities of Vishnu is that he awards liberation to those. He awards liberation to those he kills. But at the same time, the living being is independent. So if he really doesn't want to go back to Godhead, that okay, Vishnu, you killed me, but I still hate you and I don't want to go back to Godhead. I'll come back again and fight you again and torment you again. Let me birth after birth be your enemy. This is his desire. That our eternal enemy, the demons, are thinking. Alright, if you insist. But when Krishna comes, Krishna is so overwhelmingly attractive that even the demons in their hatred of him, they find their some attachment there, and Krishna accepts it, delivers them back to Godhead. And Krishna's overwhelming mercy. Now we see the list of demons, and we also list of so many great devotees. So many demons appeared in this world, and so many devotees they appeared in the Yadu dynasty and the Yadu, Bhoja, Andhaka dynasty, different dynasties. So many great devotees appeared, and even not in great dynasties. Not all of the great devotees of Krishna appeared in very, who joined with Krishna's Lila. They didn't all appear in great dynasties. We find even the Aboriginal women who used to come, they were living in the jungle, what we call nowadays Adivasi. So they were living in the forest, and they would come out of the forest to bring some food. Just like nowadays, you find people go in the forest, they bring honey, like that, out of the forest. So they would come into the village of Gokul, and they would see Krishna, they would be attracted to him, and the young girls, they would also be attracted to him, and they would pick up some kumkum from the. Adivasi girls, they wouldn't be using, but where the Krishna had embraced the gopis and some kumkum from their breast had fallen down, they would take that, or they would take the dust from where Krishna had been walking and put that dust and smear it on their breast, and in this way they would pacify their nasty feelings for Krishna. So they were from what you would call the lowest class. Here also you see the florist Sudama in Mathura. When Krishna went to Mathura, there were some devotees there, just like you see here, some members of the Yadu dynasty. They continued to live with Akura as his nominal friend. They pretended to be friends. Like Akura, he was supposed to be the friend of Kamsa. Kamsa thought, you're my good friend. But actually Akura, he didn't like Kamsa at all. But he was living in Mathura, just he thought, I'll be close to Krishna, maybe I'll get a chance to see Krishna. Didn't want to run away. He thought, at least I'll be close to Krishna, and maybe, surely after some time, Krishna will come and get rid of this tyrant, this despot. They thought, I'll see these pastors. So some of the members of the Yadu dynasty, they were living in Mathura, and in the big city, of course, there's not only kings, there's for every one king, there will be so many helpers and so many, the whole, there's so many different castes are there. So Sudama, the florist, he is there, he is a devotee. So, as you know, at least two Sudamas in Krishna Leela. There's Sudama, the forest in Mathura, Sudama, the cowherd boy, and Sudama, Vipra, in Dwarka, or otherwise Porbandar, he goes, the poor Brahmin who becomes rich. So there were devotees there in the lower class. Florist is not considered high class, that's considered Shudra class. But he is also a great devotee of Krishna. In the Shudra class, he also had the Vasana, that's considered very low class. But because he thought Anasar the Kamsa, he was very puffed up. So he insulted Krishna. He was a demon. He got his head cut off by Krishna. So in all different castes, we find the Naga Padmi, the wives of the Kaliya snake, they were also devotees of Krishna. They were not born in a very high lineage. Of course, among the snakes, they also have there's the Naga Loka, which is below this earth planet, where the snakes, certain demoniac species, they're snakes, so they have intelligence and they have kings and different castes and everything. And they can take human forms. Even Arjuna married Uluti, I think her name was. No, Uluti, the snake wife. Uluti, the snake wife of Arjuna. So there are so many different devotees in different backgrounds. They came and appeared in these past, and so many demons also. Now we hear that there are many eternal devotees of Krishna who appear with Krishna in his past. Just like these Pandavas, they're considered to be eternal devotees of Krishna who specifically appear to assist his pastimes in this material world. And there are many other devotees who, they come from Golok Vrindavan. Yashoda comes from Golok Vrindavan. Even Devaki and Vasudev, the eternal associates of Lord in the spiritual world. And sometimes it's asked that previously it's described that Devaki and Vasudev, Yashoda and Nanda in previous verse, they performed austerities by which they could take the position of Krishna's mother and father. Then how is it that they are eternal devotees of the Lord if they were performing austerities to take this position? It appears that they were devotees and in this material world, and they had some desire to have the Lord as their son, and they performed austerities, and they got him as their son. But our acharyas, especially Jiva Goswami, has explained with reference to the scriptures that actually they are directly from the spiritual world, but they took these forms previously in the material world, and then later took the forms of Nanda Yashoda, Vasudeva, and Devaki. Now another question may come that if these are eternal associates of the Lord, these are some associates of the Lord who perform pastimes with the Lord. So Krishna is always the Bhattati. It's not that he's not ever the Bhattati. He's always the Bhattati. Every time he appears, he's a Bhattati. Every time he appears, he performs Rasa Leela with the gopis. And there are many demons also who he kills. Here are the list. There's the list of some of the main ones. Palamba, Vaka, Chanara. So Krishna, when he comes, he kills many demons. So is it that these demons come again and again? No. It's not that if that was the case, then it would mean that these demons, they were Jivasarup, Krishna, Nitya, Shatru. They would be the eternal enemy of Krishna. But that's not the fact, because the eternal position of the living being is to be the servant of Krishna. We see that these demons were liberated and went back to Godhead. So how is it that every time Krishna comes, that there are similar demons? So it can be understood that different living beings, by their mixture of extreme impiety, mixed with some good fortune, they get the chance to, they have a demoniac mentality, and they get the chance to take birth as demons who come in contact with Krishna. Anyone who comes in contact with Krishna is fortunate. Even the demons, they say, even by their enmity towards Krishna, they are benefited. Of course, if someone is, it's not that everyone who is inimical towards Krishna, they get the chance to take birth as a Palamba or a Baka or a Bana. So we don't recommend to become inimical towards Krishna. That is very inauspicious for the living being to be inimical towards Krishna. But even if he is inimical towards Krishna, the fact that he somehow or other thinking of Krishna will ultimately benefit him. He will have to suffer the effects of his offenses, but somehow or other by coming in contact with Krishna, he will be purified. Even if the effect of those offenses, that will, for many, many lifetimes, he will have to suffer. So it definitely is better not to be, we're not recommending be a demon. We're recommending don't be a demon, be a devotee. But even a demon, if he directly is envious of Krishna, he gets the opportunity to be purified. Just the biggest demons are the Mayavadis. They don't even like to think of Krishna at all. They totally block him out. They don't want to think of him at all. Even the demons like Shishupal, they're more fortunate because they're always thinking of Krishna. Even in enmity, they're thinking of Krishna. So ultimately, they get the chance to be killed by Krishna. So there are different living beings, they take the forms of different demons in different births. And the pastimes may be a little different every time. It's not absolutely stereotyped that Krishna has to perform his pastimes in exactly the same way every time. Just like, for instance, I believe Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he describes, although, Prabhu, we're going to have a long discussion, maybe it could be at some other time or some other place. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes that sometimes Krishna and Balaram, they ride to Mathura on the using Kaliya as a horse. So that's a different pastime. And here, in this day of Brahma, as described in the Srimad Bhagavatam here, Kaliya is driven away from Mathura, Manda, from Rajabhumi. Go out, go to Fiji. And apparently he's in Fiji. So that's also auspicious, because it's also auspicious for the people of Fiji, because he has the footprint of Lord Krishna all over him. Krishna enjoyed a nice pastime. Kaliya was being envious towards Krishna, but Krishna enjoyed the nice pastime of dancing on all his hoods. And all his hoods became marked with the footprints of Krishna. And the wives of the Nagapatnis, or the wives of Kaliya, said they were very surprised. And how is it? You see, so many devotees, they're simply longing that we could get the dust of Krishna's feet on our heads, but this Kaliya has 1,000 heads, and every one of them is not with the dust, but directly with the footprints of Krishna. So what that is called causeless mercy. So many devotees, they want it, they're aspiring for it, they're performing meditation for millions of lifetimes, they don't get such an opportunity. But Kaliya, who is envious to all living beings, by his poison, he kills so many living beings. Just like, you see, a snake is poisonous. This poison is stored in his body, that is a physical representation of his extreme envy. And Kaliya was so poisonous that his breath was poisonous. And even living in the water, but his breath would bubble up and then spread around, and even any bird coming in that area would be flying and drop down because of the poisonous gas. Like just like here in Baroda, we get poisonous gas. And I met that also now. They want to emulate Baroda, so they also have poisonous gas. And you see, the demoniac people, they make poisonous gas which poisons everybody. So Kaliya, he was emanating from his very body poisonous gas by which so many living beings were killed. So Krishna is very merciful to him. And later on, Kaliya, because he became humble by thinking, first of all, he was trying to catch Krishna, and he caught him and pulled him under the water, and then Krishna escaped, and because he thought that if I don't, he was enjoying his pastime. But in the meantime, he thought that all the inhabitants of Vrindavan, if I stay on the water even a second longer, they'll all die. Because they're thinking I'm dead, and if they think I'm dead, then they're all dead. They're all unconscious on the ground, thinking that Krishna had died. So Krishna escaped from Kaliya's embrace. Kaliya's embrace is not the same as the embrace of the gopis, but still, he was fortunate enough to embrace the Supreme Lord. Then Krishna came up, and Krishna was dancing on his hoods, and Kaliya was with so many tentacles, and he was thinking, Krishna is dancing on this one with two heads to try and catch him. In the meantime, Krishna would jump up on that one, and this way Kaliya became bewildered. And eventually he realized, wait a minute, I can't win, I'm losing. Then he surrendered to Krishna, became a great devotee. And all the unseen to the other inhabitants of Vrindavan, all the gopis, they also came up and said, hey, you are dancing like that, but we didn't enjoy. We also want to enjoy. When you're dancing, you should dance with us. So they all had a nice Ras Leela dance on Kaliya's hood while he was moving up and down. So these are some of the pastimes Krishna was enjoying. So Kaliya became devotees. His wives, they're already devotees. Sometimes you see that the wives become devotees, and afterwards the husband becomes devotee. Sometimes he's gone the other way. In this case, the Nagapatnis, they were great devotees, and because of their devotion and their good wishes for him, their husband, who was after all a great demon, he also, by the combined mercy of Guru, in this case his gurus were his wife, and Krishna, he also became a devotee of Krishna. So we'll see so many personalities are being mentioned here in these pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan and outside Vrindavan. So many different devotees with so many different relationships. The Nagapatnis, they were great devotees. They're still thinking of their husband now. They prayed to Krishna that please deliver him. After all, he's a saint. What do you expect from a saint? He's envious by his nature. But now we promise he won't do any more trouble. We'll keep him in control and please let him go. So that, whereas we find another set of wives, they're the Dvijapatnis. They totally, the wives of the Brahmins were performing sacrificial ceremonies. They didn't care for their husbands at all. If they are the husbands, they're not devotees, to hell with it. Let's go and see Krishna. And even the Brahmins themselves said, to hell with us. After they realized that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead and they neglected him, they said, they themselves condemned them. First of all, their wives practically condemned them by leaving them. And then later on, they themselves would condemn their wives. What is the use of all our sacrificial ceremonies and our birth as high-class Brahmins? And Krishna came to us and we couldn't even recognize him. And still they didn't recognize him because they thought, Kamsa, he's just a short distance away. We have to be careful. We have to be practical, Prabhu. Krishna's here, but Kamsa's there. So, you know, we're at the border. They were just living on the edge of Vrindavan, on the side close to Mathura. So they thought, we're in between Krishna and Kamsa. So, it's all right being a devotee of Krishna, but what if Kamsa finds out and he gets to us before Krishna comes? So they recognized Krishna as the Supreme Lord, but they didn't really have faith in him, like his wife. His wife had faith that even if we abandon our husband, Krishna will protect us. We're more interested in Krishna. So there are so many varieties of devotees that will be described here. And this has been the subject matter, and still is the subject matter of great devotees who analyze these pastimes and see how is Krishna relating with the different devotees, who are these devotees, what are their different relationships, what are the relationships with devotees in Vrindavan, what are the relationships with devotees in Mathura and Dwaraka, what are the relationships in Vaikuntha. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam of Sanatana Goswami, that is considered the exposition of Srimad Bhagavatam, because it describes the different relationships of the devotees going up to the highest devotees in Vrindavan, highest of all as Srimati Radharani. So this book is an exposition of Srimad Bhagavatam, which ultimately Srimad Bhagavatam is a book of Rasa. Nidamakalpa Tulogalikam Palang Shukamakadamrita Javasangitam. physical Bhagavatam, Rasalalayam, Hora Hora Sita Bhutidharaka. Bhagavatam explains that Bhagavat Satya Vijnanam, the philosophy of the Absolute Truth, that over and above and beyond that, the ultimate limit of rasa, the ultimate limit of philosophy is then to appreciate the rasa, the pastimes of Krishna. Even to understand the rasa, that there's also philosophy to understand that. Rasa is also to be understood analytically and philosophically. It's to be experienced, but it's to be understood analytically and philosophically. Therefore we find that in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the ocean of the nectar of rasa, Bhakti Rasa, that Rupa Goswami analyzes what are the different rasas and what is rasa bhav. What are contradictory rasas, which should not be attended as contradictory. They don't bring pleasure to Krishna. So Srimad Bhagavatam establishes what is the correct philosophy and what is rasa. And these are to be properly understood. Bhakti Siddhanta Vidya Arasa Bhash Shunite Prabhu Chite Nahoya Lash. And Chaitanya Charitamrita stated that Bhakti Siddhanta Vidya Arasa Bhash, any statement that is against the proper philosophical understanding of the Bhakti science, or mixed mellow, improper mellow, just like mixing the ghastly rasa and neutral rasa with conjugal rasa, that's called rasa bhav. Just like, for instance, if someone says that so many days I've been attracted to the form of the opposite sex, which is simply made of blood, pus, stool, and urine, but now I'm going to give that up because I am now attracted to the intimate conjugal pastimes of Krishna. So within the format of Vrindavan Leela, that is rasa bhav, because you can't have conjugal rasa mixed up with this ghastly and neutral rasa. It's true, there's not the mix of the neutral rasa and the saiva that has become mixed with the conjugal rasa. So they don't mix neutrality and conjugal rasa and ghastliness and conjugal rasa, they don't mix. So all these things have to be understood from Srimad Bhagavatam and from books like Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which are the analysis of Srimad Bhagavatam, how to understand. But ultimately that is to be experienced. Ultimately Srimad Bhagavatam is presenting these pastimes of Krishna that we may enter into those pastimes and experience them. It's not simply a matter of discussion. Of course, discussing Srimad Bhagavatam, that Srimad Bhagavatam is not different from Krishna. So if your devotee can experience Krishna in every page of Bhagavatam, you can experience Krishna's pastimes. But it's not simply a matter of academic analysis. One has to actually enter into the mood of the devotee by taking up the service mood. Then you can understand Krishna and experience these pastimes. So that cannot be attempted prematurely. That is a gift from Krishna. Atashri Krishna Nama Adina Bhagavad Graha Vindriyai Sivan Nukha Hiji Rame Swami Vaksurati Adha. One cannot artificially do a whole vault into Krishna's leela, but he has to become qualified by serving Krishna. Then Krishna will bestow upon him the understanding and the experience of Bhakti Rasa. So now we're beginning the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, having read through all the previous cantos in the classes here, in this temple. So, 10th canto especially, that is a matter of relish. All the Bhagavatam is meant for study, understanding, and relishing. Especially the 10th canto, the pastimes of Krishna, are most relishing. Because Krishna is the most attractive. His name is Krishna. He is the most attractive form of the attractive forms of the personality of Godhead. So these 10 canto pastimes, they are the subject matter of relish, particularly by the Rasika Bhakti, or those who are experiencing those rasas. But all classes of people can enjoy hearing about Krishna, with the exception of two classes of people. They will not relish the pastimes of Krishna. That is described at the beginning of the previous chapter. They are Pashugna, the animal killer, or the killer of the soul, namely the Mayavadi. they will not relish the pastimes of Krishna. But everybody else, they can relish these pastimes, they can take pleasure in hearing the pastimes of Krishna. Therefore, Prabhupada presented Krishna books, the pastimes of Krishna in the 10th canto with philosophical explanations, so people might not misunderstand, and have them widely distributed so that people can have some attraction for Krishna. Because by hearing about Krishna, the result is that you go to Krishna, Shinvanti, Jayanti, Vinanti, Adishnata, Smaranti, Nandanti, Tadeva Sanjanaha. Taeva Pashanta Shirena Savakam Bhava Prabaho Paramang Padam Bhujam. Kunti Devi presents very nice analysis that she says, my dear Krishna, those who hear about your pastime, or glorify your pastime, or remember your pastime, or take pleasure in others doing so, certainly see your lotus feet. And therefore, they will never again have to see repeated birth and death. So this is the benefit of Krishna's pastime. Actually, we're here, we're supposed to discuss Krishna's pastime. There's so much philosophy to discuss, but our goal, or our desire, our aim is to discuss Hari Katha, there's philosophy, there's description of the form of Krishna, and specifically discussion of the pastimes of Krishna. They're very pleasing. Mano Dhirama, they're very pleasing to hear. Therefore, now we're entering into the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, there'll be discussion of Krishna's pastimes, so I won't be here, but those of you who are, you can relish hearing these pastimes of Krishna in Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the perfection of life, to relish these pastimes, to engage in the service of Krishna, to chant the names of Krishna, to hear the pastimes of Krishna. All these activities are on the platform, they're on the perfectional platform. So we may not have reached the perfectional platform of appreciation of what it means to serve Krishna, what it means to chant his name, what it means to hear his pastimes. But these activities, their activities on the perfectional platform. The perfected souls, they like to hear about Krishna. And even those who are not perfected, that are trying to be perfected, they also like to hear about Krishna. And as they cultivate that relish for hearing about Krishna, they become perfect. Hare Krishna. Any questions? Comments? You have to speak louder, because quite a long way back there. Liberation. I heard that both the devotees and the non-devotees were by the mercy of Krishna just transferred back to Godhead, and then? What is completely different? The activity. Their attitude towards Krishna is different, yes? Well, that is the mercy of Krishna. Many times the demons, they're liberated, but they don't go back to Godhead, especially those who are killed by the Lord in other forms than Vishnu, in other forms than Krishna. They get impersonal liberation. But mostly those who are killed by Krishna directly, they get liberated back to Godhead. You can only say that Krishna's special mercy, causeless mercy. Causeless mercy means, if you say what is the reason, then the word causes means ahaisiti. It means without any hiti, without any particular cause, other than Krishna's mercy. That is his mercy. Causeless mercy. They may not get a position as exalted as the devotee. They may get some devotional position. But Kutana took the position of mother, not the position of mother Yashoda. She got the position of mother. Therefore, that famous verse is there. Who spoke that? Uddhava. He said, who should I take shelter of? But who can be more merciful than Krishna? Just see how merciful Krishna is. So the understanding is that how merciful he is, because he gave Uddhava the position of his mother. Now the understanding is that all these demons, they also had some attraction to Krishna. And Krishna, after killing them, he took away all their offenses and all their sinful activities, and what was left, a little bit of attraction to Krishna, Krishna magnified that and gave them the position as his devotee. Now in the case of Kripanath, described in her previous life, she was the sister of Bali Mala, name of Ratna Mala. So when Balandev first came, she saw, oh, what a nice little boy. So sweet and cute and beautiful. She thought, who is that lucky woman who has suckled him at her breast? I wish I could also have the opportunity. She had a motherly feeling towards him. But then later when Balandev cheated Bali Maharaj and took everything away from him, superficially cheated him, she, along with all the other demons, apart from Bali Maharaj and Pallad Maharaj, became very angry, because that is the nature of the demons, they are against Vishnu. So she became very angry and her demoniac mentality came out and she thought, I'd like to kill this master. He came as a nice little boy, but he was trying to cheat us. So in the next life she got the opportunity of putting her to attempt what is not possible anyway, to kill him. So after she was killed by Krishna, Krishna remembered that after all, she did at one point have some loving feelings towards me. So Krishna remembered, she wanted to be my mother. All right, let her be my mother. So that is the mercy of Krishna. He takes the good side, not the bad side. He thought that she has some motherly feeling, let me accept her. And the bad thing, all right, cut that out. But what is the good thing? Accept her. So that is devotees, especially devotees in the creatures of Krishna consciousness. That is their expertise also, because we can't think that a new one we need will be a devotee. We have to meet so many demoniac people in our teaching. So if the devotee, the very expert devotee, can find some inclination to serve Krishna, and if he can bring that out, he can make the demons into devotees. That is their gift from Krishna, if he can do that. Why this contradiction? That devotees are all the time serving Krishna, but if you do some offense, you're not going to get Krishna consciousness. Well, no, if you make some offense, it's not necessary that you're not going to get Krishna consciousness. But an offense will slow down your progress. But offense doesn't necessarily mean that you're not going to get Krishna consciousness. The process of sadhana is to come to the perfect stage by which we become free from all offenses. Even then you may do due to